We are about to begin a new Sefer, Sefer Shmos. In this Sefer, the Jews begin their exile in Egypt, and it begins with slavery. At the end of the Sefer, we will see how the Jews are a free nation, living under the rule of Hashem within Mishkan in their midst. To fully understand the Sefer, we need to understand who were these B'nai Israel. Where did they come from, and how and why did the slavery and torture begin? The Tzenar Rena begins by describing for us the nature of the children of Yaakov. The Sefer starts with the words, Ve'ela Shemos B'nei Yisrael. These are the names of Yaakov's children, Yisrael's children, and it then proceeds to list them. We know who these people are. We just read an entire Sefer which chronicled how they came to be, and in the last paragraph we saw about Yaakov and his children and how they buried him in Eretz Yisrael. Here it describes them as the sons of Yisrael. The Tzenar Rena wants us to know two things from this listing. Number one, how great these people were, and how did Yaakov merit to have these exceptional sons? The Tzenar Rena starts with a quote from Mishlei to give us guidance as to how we ourselves could have such wonderful children. The quote from Mishlei says, like a ring of gold, a golden ornament is a wise man's reproof to a listening ear. What this means is just like jewelry beautifies a body, a person is beautified, his character is beautified when he hears musar, when he hears rebuke, when he hears guidance from a Talmud Chacham, from a wise man. Musar, words of rebuke, set a person straight. It changes a person. It prepares them to be able to learn Torah and listen to Hashem. There are two parts that are necessary in the giving of musar. First, there has to be a person who's willing to give guidance, who notices a problem and explores it with the other person. And then there's also the person himself who receives that guidance, who then needs to self-reflect and change when others point out a flaw. Both of these things existed in the relationship between Yaakov and his sons, and this is what allowed them to become great. When can this relationship of guidance between two people have the most impact? When is the most effective time in a person's life to receive and give musar? The Tzenar Rena says that the main time to give musar, to correct a child, is while he's still young. When a child is young, he's drawn after pleasures. He wants candy. He wants to stay up late. He doesn't yet have a Yetzer Hatov. He doesn't yet have a good inclination because the Yetzer Tov enters a person at the age of 13. And therefore, it's important to guide a child when they are young. Shlomo HaMelech, in fact, says that whoever holds back the stick from his son, whoever does not give consequences and does not guide a child, it's a sign that he actually hates his son. The Tzenar Rena brings an example of David HaMelech, who did not give musar to his son Avshalom. And therefore, what happened to Avshalom, who David treated with such kid gloves? He grew up to be evil, which led him to rebel against his father, who treated him with such love, and to even sleep with the wives of David HaMelech. And David had to flee Yerushalayim because of him. In contrast, Yaakov Avinu gave musar to his children, and that's why they're all tzaddikim. These are the names of the children of Yisrael. They were upright children who resembled him because Yaakov always guided them to do good. The Sefer, then, begins by giving us important guidance. We live in a time where parents and teachers are scared to set boundaries for children. We suggest rather than using a voice of authority. Would you rather go to sleep, honey, or would you rather stay up, we might say to a two-year-old. I think one of the reasons that we fear to use our authoritative voices is because we've heard horror stories about kids rebelling and leaving the Torah path because of overly strict families and teachers who had no flexibility. So we bend the completely opposite way. We need to know that it is equally bad to ignore pure behavior in a young child. We are robbing them of the ability to be happy as they get older. It may feel easier, it may even feel righteous, but it is not in the child's best interest. Children crave structure. Their brain has not developed yet, so they can't make decisions based on right and wrong until they're at least 13 because they don't have the Yetzer HaTov. They'll eat the candy, they'll be mean, they'll neglect schoolwork, they'll stay up late because they have no idea of the consequences of their actions. As the adults, we need to help them gain self-discipline so that they will like themselves and have the tools to grow up to be healthy and God-fearing adults. There's a second important lesson for us here. After the sale of Yosef, we could think that the Shvatim are less than ideal human beings. This Sefer and the beginning of the Sefer is here to set the record straight. The Shvatim were all tzaddikim. We come from a very holy lineage. On their level, from what Hashem wanted for them, they were not perfect, and that's what the focus of Sefer Bereishis is. But as you will see, the minor flaws that existed in Sefer Bereishis are gone by the beginning of Sefer Shmos, as we will describe in the following psukim. We now have a slight glimpse into the Shvatim. Rashi, quoted by Tzenar Rena, focuses on a different aspect of the greatness of the Shvatim. The Torah lists the Shvatim at the beginning of the Sefer. This is strange, as it already listed them in Parshas Vayigash. Rashi brings a mashal. He says that the Bnei Yisrael are compared to the stars in the heaven. Because with stars, when you take them out to light up the world, Hashem counts them, and when you put them back again, Hashem counts them again. In the same way, Bnei Yisrael are important, so Hashem counted them when they were alive, and he counted them after Yaakov's death now as well. This is a cryptic message. In Parshas Vayigash, the Torah lists all of the families of the children of Yaakov who descended to Mitzrayim, including the children. In Sefer Shmos, in Parshas Shmos, it only mentions the names of the Shvatim. So, were they truly counted again? And why is Rashi using this analogy to stars? Why are the Shvatim, the children of Yaakov, being compared to stars when they are brought back in and comparing it to when they are brought out? The Gur Aryeh, who's not quoted by the Tzenaren, explains that the Shvatim were the essence of the Jewish people. The 12 Shvatim correspond to the 12 constellations, to all the stars in the sky. Each constellation is made up of countless stars, but all these stars are subsumed into one entity, into one constellation. So whereas in Parshas Vayigash, 70 souls came down, in essence, these 70 souls can be categorized as the 12 Shvatim who represent the totality of the future Jewish people. Why stars? Why are the Shvatim being compared to stars by Rashi? The Tzenarena quotes the opinion of the Sefer Tzvor Hamor and the Toldos Yitzchak, where they write that tzaddikim are compared to stars because just like the stars shine more at night and are more noticeable at night than in the day, even though they exist during the day, the tzaddikim are lit and respected more in the future world, in the Olam HaElyon, than we respect them in this world. What is this teaching us? It's saying that we can't respect greatness because we're limited by our perspective. At a funeral, we might know somebody, we think they're a regular person, but then at the funeral, we start to get a glimpse of what made them great. We realize that our awareness of the other person's greatness was diminished because of our limitations. We didn't notice, we didn't pay attention, we couldn't appreciate what they were doing. We can only appreciate that which we see. In the world to come, Hashem appreciates the tzaddik's true value. After listing the names of the Shvatim, the Pasuk says, Ish uveso ba'u. Each man and his house came. What is the message? The Tzenarena, quoting Rabbeinu B'chaye, this Cheskuni and Imre Noam, write that this Pasuk shows that Yaakov Avinu made sure to marry off all of his sons and grandsons to wives whom he chose, so that his children would not need to marry Mitzri women. The homes of the Jewish people were set up from the beginning to live lives of holiness, even in exile. This is setting the scene for what the Jewish people will be like in Mitzrayim. They came from the greatness of the Shvatim. They had families and wives who shared their same values, and so they had prospects for a beautiful future. The Midrash says that Ish Uveso hints to one more thing. Ish is a name that can mean Hashem. In Az Yashir, it calls Hashem Ish Mochama, a man of war. The Jewish people came down with Ish, with Hashem with them. They came from a glorious past of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and the 12 Shvatim. They had a future that they could build with their wives who shared the same values, and Hashem was with them at all times. Rabbeinu B'chaye, again of course quoted by the Tzenarena, looks at the names of the Shvatim listed in the Psukim and learns from here how much the Shvatim have grown and how much they have improved toward the end of their lives. It notes the order of the Shvatim. It lists the sons of Leah, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Hudi, Yisachar, Zvulun. Then it lists Binyamin. Then it lists the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, Dan, Asher, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher. And finally, it lists Yosef. Why is Yosef listed at the end, and why are the sons of Rachel split up? The Tzenarena gives two explanations. The first is that it was showing that the children of Rachel and Leah didn't have arrogance toward the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, of the children of the Shvachos, of the maids, but they considered them as important as Yosef and Binyamin, who were the sons of Rachel, the beloved wife of Yaakov. So Yosef is at the end to show that these four sons were equivalent to Binyamin and Yosef. So they stuck them in the middle of listing the children of Rachel. Second, Yosef is put at the end to show that even though Yosef was the ruler, he was in charge, he didn't act with gaiva, he didn't act with arrogance, but rather he was the symbol of anava. Because a truly righteous person, by their very nature, are modest. They don't view themselves as superior to others. The greater a person is, the more they surrender and lower themselves to other people. We see that there has been that a major issue that existed in Sefer Bereishis has now been fixed. One, Yosef felt that the children of Bilhah and Zilpah were not being treated with respect. And two, Yosef put himself over his brothers. And both of these issues led to so much pain. And Hashem held them responsible, and there was the story of the sale of Yosef. These minor flaws that Hashem held them accountable for were not forever. They eradicated these poor flaws from their character. And this tshuva, this change, is the foundation on which the Jewish people are built. The list of the Shvatim ends with the words of Yosef Hayab b'Mitzrayim, and Yosef was in Mitzrayim. The Tenorena quotes Rashi, who asks, what is this pasuk telling us here? Don't we know that Yosef is in Mitzrayim? They're all in Mitzrayim. What it's telling us is that Yosef was a tzaddik. He was a holy man. Even though Yosef had lived for so many years in the land of Egypt among the impure sorcerers and evildoers and idol worshippers, with all this, Yosef remained Yosef. And he stayed a tzaddik like he was before when he lived in his father's home with his yiras shemayim, with his fear of heaven, and his tznius, his modesty. And then, after listing the Shvatim, the pasuk tells us a very sad phrase that serves as a transition. Vayamas Yosef v'chal achav v'chal hadar hu. And Yosef died, and all of his brothers and all that generation. The holiness of the Shvatim were no longer with their children. The Shvatim's greatness could no longer protect their children from harm. The next pasuk says words which we might recognize from the Haggadah. Ubnei Yisrael paru v'yishritzu v'yirbu v'yitzmu b'me'od me'od. And Bnei Yisrael were fruitful. Bnei Yisrael grew and got stronger, and every woman gave birth to 6 children at one time. Even though the tzaddikim died and they thought that their lives were over, that they were going to lose all protection, our Father in heaven, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lived on. He was with them, and he is always with us. This pasuk lists all these verbs to show us that Bnei Yisrael grew and got stronger, and with every woman gave birth to 6 children at one time. There was no woman who miscarried, and there were no women who were barren. Every woman was able to have children, and their families were living miracles. Not because of the tzaddikim who were amongst them, but because of Hashem's being with them. Vayirbu ma'od, Bnei Yisrael multiplied greatly. The Tzenu Renov says, I once saw a woman who gave birth to 4 children at one time. He's quoting Rav Avram from a midrash. The way of the world is if twins are born to a woman, the children are naturally weak. Because it's a simple thing that the energy of the woman is needed to make one child, then a woman needs to make one child, is now split into 2 children. And therefore, of course, the children are weak. But and what happens if a person gives birth to triplets or quadruplets? They're all going to be extremely weak. And here in Egypt, when a woman gave birth to 6 children at once, according to nature, the children should be as weak as flies because the energy of one child was divided into 6 parts. It should have been that every child, according to this calculation, should have the life force of 1/6 of a child. Therefore, the pasuk tells us, Vayirbu, they became many, even though they became many, and there were 6 in one womb, even still, Vayatzmu b'ma'od ma'od, they were very, very strong. And it is here that the transition begins. Bnei Yisrael started off as 70, led by the holy Shvatim, but they grew very, very quickly to thousands, and the Egyptians react very poorly to this change. And Vayaka Melech Chadash, and then a new king arises. The Chizkuni writes, if the pasuk had written and he died, and then a new king arose, I would have said that the previous king had died, and therefore they appointed a new king over them. But now it's written simply, and a new king arose. It's understood from here that this was the previous king, the old king. What happened? He saw what was going on and he made new decrees. He had been the king from the time of Yosef, and he began new decrees against the Jewish people and completely forgot about all the good that Yosef did with him and with his whole nation. The first thing he did was that he called his nation and said to them, I'll tell you something. Hinei am b'nei Yisrael rav atzu ma'od. Behold, the nation of Bnei Yisrael is great and mightier than us. Paro said to his nation that there are 3 reasons we need to figure out how to kill the Jewish people. Number 1, they are very learned about how to have miracles happen for them. Do you remember what Yaakov did to Esav? Esav came to fight Yaakov, and he brought with him 400 men. And Esav had no power to defeat Yaakov. He couldn't do anything to him. 2, don't forget what the 2 sons of Yaakov did. They killed an entire city. They killed the city of Shechem. And three, they number a lot, and they themselves sold their brother. So while we may think that we're partners, we might think that we get along with them, there are so many of them, and don't think that they wouldn't stoop to selling us as well. And in general, they're strong, and therefore, Hava Neschachmelo, we have to outsmart him. We have to think of a way to kill them. But in order to do this, we need to do this with wisdom. We can't kill them outright. We need to consider how to kill them. Because what happens with gods? Gods pay back midah k'neged midah, deed for deed. And therefore, we need to figure out a way to kill these people. And the only way that I can think of is to throw their children into the sea and into the Nile. Because we can overcome their god by water. Hashem had already sworn never to bring a flood to the world. And since it's the nature of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he pays back deed for deed, act for act, he's never going to bring a flood. And therefore, he won't punish us if we kill the Jewish people through water. These Egyptians were so limited in how they related to gods and how they thought they could be so easily controlled that they couldn't understand that although it was true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had already sworn never to bring a flood into the world, it meant that he wouldn't bring a flood on the whole world. But he would bring a flood onto one area of land and he could bring a flood on them. But they didn't realize this. They were so short-sighted because they thought that Hashem was that limited. The main thing that weighed on Paro was the great population and the numbers, and that Bnei Yisrael multiplied it day after day, until Paro once again said to his people, "You know that a great danger is hovering over us from Bnei Yisrael, because they get more and more from day to day. And what would happen if we have a war with our enemies? They're going to take advantage of the opportunity. They will join with our enemies, and together they will fight against us, and we will have to leave the land. And we will have to be uprooted from this land that we hold dear, even from these strangers. Therefore, we must fight against this danger with everything we have, and we have to kill them. We have to get rid of them from this world. And we have to do it with water because we want to make sure that they can't fight back and their God doesn't protect them." And so, Paro and his nation tricked the Jewish people into becoming slaves. Medrash tells us and explains how, on the first day of work, Paro put officers that took from Bnei Yisrael high taxes. He didn't want himself to be associated with taking taxes from the Jewish people because they would say he was cruel and unfair and evil. And therefore, he had tax officials who were the vehicle of the state. They implemented what he wanted. He also had them sign up and volunteer to do community projects. And after the first day of work, Paro commanded at night that they should count and list how many bricks they made during the day. And he saw how many bricks they made, and he said, "From this day on, you have to make the same amount." And he appointed officers who would watch and count their work. And so he then commanded, after he commanded them to become slaves, that they should go and do the work in the field, that every one of Bnei Yisrael should sleep in the field and not go at home at all, because he wanted that they shouldn't be with their wives and get pregnant, and they would have no more children. And in this way, he would cut down on the number of the Jewish people. From the children of such great people, the Bnei Yisrael have descended in such a short time into a life of slavery, where they are forced to work backbreaking labor to prevent them from staying strong and from maintaining the connection they had to their parents and to now having more children. But we need to look at what happens next in the Parsha. The next thing that Tanarena tells us about is how the women fought back, how they went to their husbands in the field and they got pregnant, how there was these two women called Shifra and Pua who did not drown the babies. They fought back against Paro because they knew a very important thing. They knew where they came from. They knew they were the children of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the 12 Shvatim who were tzaddikim, who were pure, who were holy. They knew that they had built beautiful Jewish homes, homes built on the foundations of Yaakov Avinu that he had set up, and they knew that Hashem was with them, that Hashem was setting the course. The future was going to be beautiful, and right now Paro is trying to torture them, but the power does not exist with him. So they never gave up. They went to their husbands in the field, they got pregnant, they continued to have children, they continued to do what was right to help build the Jewish people, because they knew Hashem was with them. And this is the message of this beginning of the Parsha. We too are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and the Shvatim. We too have this holy heritage. We have this lineage that is holy and pure. We have homes that are built upon the foundations that Yaakov Avinu set for us. We are building oases in a world that is crazy. and Hashem is with us. So while the rest of the world looks at us and may try to persecute us and tell us that we are nothing and they are going to try to beat us down, we can never forget that Hashem is on our side, and make sure to be the ones to give this message to our husbands, to our children, to inspire them to grow and become better. Because as long as Hashem is on our side, nobody can outsmart him, and we just have to do the next right thing. Have a good Shabbos.